it is. It's basketball. It's not a fucking soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Andrew, we're back. Welcome back.
Thank you, Joe. Thanks. Good to be here again.
I just want to quickly say, top of the program, keep practicing. I listened to the one with your brother, Patrick. Really enjoyed it. It's a it's an informative, relaxing listen. I really am envious of the platform you've got going there, because you can talk about anything you want, whether it is sports or, you know, to family. It's stuff that's very particular to you, and I really enjoy the insight. It's good.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's something obviously very different to this podcast. It's kind of whatever happens to be on my mind at the point in time and what I'm interested in talking about. So it's a fun chance to engage in you know, the inner thinkings of my brain. This time, yeah, just recently I had my brother on, who's recently moved to Switzerland, so reflecting on his voyage overseas and starting up a new life over there after leaving a relatively successful one here in Perth.
And that's what I like. And to people who are listening and thinking about, like, oh, should I start a podcast or a website or a Twitter? If you put it out there, like, I found yours by virtue of you contacting me, but once I got in touch with, once I started listening, I just sort of fell into it, and just, it felt part of your routine. And if they're sort of short enough, people will find the time to listen. And it's just nice sort of getting people's perspective on stuff that's important to them without any real, you know, ulterior motive where it's too commercial, which is I think you've got the nice, the great balance. So that's my advice to people listening who want to start their own.
Yeah, just go out and do it. What's the worst that can happen? And have some fun. Follow your hobbies. If it's something you're interested in, do it. There's other people out there that will like it.
They will. People will catch it and run with it. I promise you. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yep.
But let's talk NBL. Hasn't been a huge amount of news, but we did find five or six topics that we wanted to talk about or throw at you.
Yeah.
Do you want to start off with that first one about, is it Donald Sloan, or do you have anything else you want to start?
Yeah. No, just other than it's, I think we just need to carry on the presumption that there is a season. Like, you know, we'll talk about this probably a bit later as well, but I just think that we need to act as if everything's normal with regards to a season going ahead until we hear otherwise, because otherwise it takes the fun out of it as well. Like, there's not much point tracking a league and seeing movements if you don't think there's going to be a season to watch all these guys play.
We'll talk about it later, but I've quoted this person about two or three times on the podcast. I think it's the troll from Frozen 2, where he says, when the future is unclear, just do the next right thing. And that's what it is right now. It's like, well, if you operate under the assumption that there will be a season, at least you derive something from that. But, gee, you could very easily be thinking the other way. But we'll talk about that in a second.
We will.
Let's go Donald Sloan. It hasn't been formally announced, but rumored. But I think the report has come through Olgan Ulick from Fox Sports, or a freelancer from Fox Sports and ESPN. He's good friends with Isaac Humphries of Lighthouse Sports, so that's probably pretty reliable at this point. Just a few little vitals on this Sloan character. 32, turning 33 if the season goes ahead. He was last in the NBA 2016, 4 or 5 years ago. The year before, played in the Chinese League. Scored 25 points per game. Big scorer. I was surprised to see that. But in last year, only played the 5 games in Germany, 12 points per game, 2 assists. The 5 games wasn't due to injury or getting cut. It was COVID related. The season was cut short for him. That's where we're at with him. What do you think?
You say they have a cup of coffee in the NBA. This is like, I had a stein of lager in Germany. Is that what they say? And they stopped for a short period of time. It's interesting. I mean, it's probably what do you think? Smart signing by the Sixers, getting somebody who's a bit older, a bit of a steadying influence.
When I first read his sort of bio, point guard, just over 6 feet or just under, I can't recall. But, you know, 32, 33, I was like, hang on, have I brought up Jerome Randall's Wikipedia page or Donaldson? I think he's better than Randall. I think he'd be more of a play setter than him. Did you see any of his highlights? Did you see him play in the NBA? I remember his name. But
no, I've drawn a blank, and it's interesting. The name sounds like he should be a manager of a team, not really a player. Something like Donald Sloan. I don't know anything of him, to be perfectly honest. I've read up his stats and saw that he's bounced around a lot of leagues and seems to have embraced the idea of being a international journeyman.
Yeah.
So good on him.
I read an article on him that gave that impression. And the one thing I look at is 32, 33. That's, post prime, where's his head at? Is it collect a paycheck? Is it, you know, what you know, how do you define your mindset where it's at that point your career is obviously on the way down, that you peak at 27 and you know, so whether he's been able to prolong his prime, but you know, is he going to come in and just sort of play set? Is that the type of player they need? Let's say he does come in and he's like, I'm happy to distribute, score when I need. Do you think he's the right fit in Adelaide?
I think they need a bit more of a weapon, don't they? A bit more of a scoring threat. He may be that. Yeah, he's obviously he had a good career behind him. He doesn't seem like he's ever put up the big numbers.
Right.
But at the same time, maybe it's been the situation that he's found himself in. So I put this down as a solid but unspectacular signing. I think I can see why they would have gone down this path, but I still wonder if they've got enough to make it happen. Shooting is still a concern from what I can see.
Exactly. I thought they were just going to go out and get a guy who was a rock solid 20 plus points. High volume. Don't worry about the percentages, but just a guy who's willing to take a mate. And maybe he is that, but gee, like, at you know, you look at the Hawks, they've signed Harvey, 27 years old. You know, like, he's a guy who's going to be everywhere because he's just physically capable of it. You know, Sloan is a bit more of a, you know, 33. You kind of pick your spots a bit more. And yeah, as you said, like, you look at that starting lineup. They need points. DJ can score, tick. But, you know, McVay, Sunday, they're starting quite forward. Isaac Humphreys, like, are they volume scorers? Are they going to put up 100 points a game or thereabouts, which is what's needed to win?
If you're in a pressure situation, you know, the clock's winding down, you need a bucket. Mm. Who do you give it to on this team?
DJ Sloan.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if I trust DJ. DJ's not going to create off the dribble, is he?
No.
So, okay, so it's Sloan. And have we got evidence that Sloan is that clutch, you know, shooter? Mm. We don't. He may be, but it's a question awaiting an answer.
Especially with Hobson around, I was like, wouldn't he have been perfect? And then make up that point guard spot where you just get a guy to progress the ball and give it to him. Used to playing with a high volume in the NBL. Whereas Sloan, it's just a little bit more of a question mark, you know, a little less reliable. And I felt this team really, if you're only going with one, as they say, I thought they would have got someone. Yeah.
Is this an under budget team? Are they saving money this season?
I think so. Well, you know, Giddy's going to be in their rotation. They don't pay for him. The NBL pays his wages.
Yeah.
Humphreys have paid a lot for, apparently, and that's pretty fair. As in, I can confirm that they paid enough for him.
Yeah.
But then, you know, McVay, like, is he? Mm. And then, you know, the other thing is they had quite a number of guys who were still contracted return. So they've obviously taken a 50% cut or thereabouts, you know. So, yeah, I think so.
It's almost like, really, is it just they've just put this season down to a transition year, get some. Well, I don't even know. They don't need to develop Giddy because he's not going to hang around.
No.
So that doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's not like they want to invest in him and teach him the ways.
Exactly. And the other thing is the team last year didn't exactly, you know, I looked at that team and didn't think, oh, there's no one on that team who's particularly high-priced either, you know. They didn't have like a top-line import like Randall. And, you know, Joey Wright gets a lot of guys to sign along with him for not money, you know.
Yeah,
For comfort and the relationship. So I feel like this is now the second year in a row that they've sort of, you know, kept a bit in the bank.
If I was a fan, you know, season ticket holder of the 36ers, I'd be a little upset.
That was my final question on this. Like, we did the sort of season preview before, but does this give you any more optimism about this team being anywhere near the top four or five?
No, it doesn't. And if you're going to hope they're going to show a lot of heart and effort because that's what they're going to have to be selling people on, I think. It's not going to be spectacular basketball.
Mm. Anything else to add? Or do you want to move on to Kevin White?
Let's go to Kevin White.
Former 36er, so it kind of relates. He signed with the Wildcats. I'm just going to sort of open the floor to you on this one. Your first reactions, your thoughts. I've read some of the stuff you said on Twitter. You just say your reactions. Go for it. Take the floor.
I'm devastated. I mean, seriously, is this the best that they can do? It feels like the Perth Wildcats. It suddenly feels like the fall of the Roman Empire, the USA under Donald Trump. Everything's just falling apart. I don't get it.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to try and talk you off the ledge because I didn't get that reaction, but I can sympathize. I can see why you came to that reaction, but I didn't have the same one. But please go on.
I tried to talk myself around. I tried to tell myself, no, look, he's only there to play a specific role. He's, you know, defensively solid. That's all they need from him. They don't need him to score the ball. Mm. Yeah, they don't, you know. But really, if you're only going to get Kevin White, and he's only going to give you 5 or 10 minutes of defensive effort. Can we bloody, let's get a young guy in there. Let's get Taylor Britt back. I get it, but I don't get it. It just upsets me, and I just don't like him. It's like there's got to be so many better players at a lower level of basketball in Australia who could outplay that dude, and they don't get a shot. And just because he's got a name and has been around the league, it's like, yeah, roll him back out.
All right.
Take a risk. Give us something new.
You know what? It's amazing you said take a risk. And here's what I wrote in my little notes about this. I said, are the Wildcats sort of burying their head in the sand with this signing? Instead of trying to find, like, they're obviously finding like-for-like replacements of the players they've lost. Martin and Nick Kay. Nick Kay, you make sense. You have to go out and get an import player who can really fill his spot. That I understand, obviously.
Yep.
But when Damian Martin left, it's like, okay, what are we going to do with our backup point guard? And they've just immediately gone, or let's just get a Damian Martin clone and just, you know, like they're just square peg, square hole, just get it done quick, you know. And instead of going like, well, maybe if we do a little bit something different with the point guard spot or what have you, you know, change that style up a bit. For me, this question with Kevin White is, I put out a tweet and I said, the NBL's Prince Charles has been coronated. You know, like there's Mitch Norton, Prince Charles waiting for the Queen to die. It's happened. And now he's king. And Norton's in. He's in the starting lineup after very patiently waiting. My problem with that is, can he play 30 plus minutes? Because Kevin White cannot give you, because before it was Norton at 20, Martin at 20, and they kind of filled in.
Yeah.
Can Mitch Norton play 30 minutes a game of high quality basketball? And can he manage that workload? He normally misses a couple of games with a hamstring, with a this, with a that. And him missing 3 and 4 games is the difference between one and potentially four, you know, and you need that home court advantage. Well, you'd think if there's crowds. So that's my thing to you. That's what the Wildcats are worried about. I also got a reply to that tweet from Lockie Reed, who actually answered it pretty well. She says, well, Bryce is going to run more of the show, which I hadn't actually really thought of at the time. And I thought, well, that's obvious. Of course he will. Yeah. And that's a good answer. But then the other part of his rebuttal was, well, White brings leadership and qualities that suit the club's culture. And I thought, is that really what's happened here? Or Kevin White is the last guard signed of all of them. Jared Kenny was announced the day earlier that day. I don't think that was any coincidence. Do you think that was a coincidence?
No. They had to have been in the negotiations with Kenny, and it was okay. So it fell apart. And that's one of my other questions. How did they not sign Jared Kenny? He's an alumni of the club. The fact that he didn't want to come back, is that ringing alarm bells for your ability to recruit?
It would be ringing alarm bells for them, yes, I would think, where it's like, hang on, like I'm the pretty girl at the table. What happened? I think not that it rings alarm, but I think Jared Kenny just said, listen, it's the same amount of money as Cairns and I don't want to move across the country. And when you think about it like that,
From a lifestyle point of view.
Point of view. And I think he was only too happy there and he was going to play the same role at either club. So he just thought, it's a good thing going on. You know, if it isn't broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's other options out there. Like, you know, Emmett Nahr, you couldn't have persuaded him. Would you rather have Emmett Nahr backing up?
Yes.
Sean Bruce, I think he was very happy in Sydney, and of course,
you could. I don't think you could get him, but if you could, you would.
Mm. And then Sunday, that's the one you wanted, as a Perth fan, and it didn't happen.
And then, what about Ethan Rusbatch? I know he's more of a two, more of a shooting.
That's what I talk about, doing something different with the spot.
Just mix it up. I mean, I don't think the Wildcats really need Kevin White's leadership. I mean, you've got a fairly experienced squad. You know, you might teach them how to use WhatsApp, but apart from that.
Hey, now.
Sorry, he's apologized for that, hasn't he?
He has indeed. And when I talk about this, the WhatsApp thing is one of the furthest things from my consideration.
It's just good gag. You know, it's a good gag. I like it. I'll throw it out there.
But listen, like, that was not handled well. I really I resented him for it. I thought sharing private messages on the internet like that is an absolute no-go. I can forgive him for it, but geez, I can't forget it. It's forgivable, yeah. But it's not forgettable. Yeah. And you know, it's water under the bridge, but at the same time, it's like also leadership. Okay. I would have thought of all the teams in the last 5 to 10 years, the team that most needed leadership in that time was probably last year's Adelaide 36ers, and it totally fell apart. So it's like, couldn't have been that good of a leader. That was an absolute SHIT show. So, and then also I think with the leadership thing, it's like, well, if your leadership's not coming from your best player, it's kind of a bit of a waste of time. It's like when people sign, I remember Josh Powell, who played deep off the bench for the Lakers. And he signed to another team, a young team, maybe an Atlanta Hawks team that never wins.
Yeah.
And the signing was sort of said like, oh, you know, he's going to bring that championship experience. He's never played. Like, it's not the same. You bring leadership if you've been, you know, an MVP, former MVP, or you know, big minutes, and you actually play something. Like Mika Vekona.
Yeah.
Brings leadership because he actually plays good as a game.
Yeah.
And he's won it. Kevin White, this is now he's been on two losing team seasons. So it's
two
like,
losing team. Yeah.
And in 8.7 minutes, it's not a lot to show leadership.
I just don't see the point. It just seems like a pointless exercise to recruit this guy, to pay him. I mean, he must have come really cheap.
I would think so.
To bring him over. And you know it's going to be a one-year thing. It's like, what's the point? It strikes me as pointless. And so, great, the Wildcats have another point guard who can't shoot. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. Great stuff, you know.
And there must be someone out there at another level. And to break this into a conversation that's more widely about the Wildcats, are you in a sense of panic as a fan?
Not panic.
Worry?
Worry, yes. There's a lot riding on the Nick Kay replacement.
Oh, big time.
That person is going to have to be super duper player.
Cam Oliver type. Yep.
And then ideally the Wildcats pull a rabbit out of the hat and get Cotton naturalized. Yep. And then, you know, then it's fine. Happy days.
I must admit, when I watched Overtime last night, it was a good show again. Or not last night, but the night before.
Yeah.
And my question to you, Andrew, would be if I said to you that the Wildcats could roll it back with Kay, but without Plumlee, and do a sort of, you know, Kay, Majuk, Blanchfield, Cotton, and Norton, and that's your crunch time five, and then you know, with Wagstaff slipping in as well. Would you feel confident about that team going for winning the three-peat?
No.
Because I would. I would.
Would you?
Really?
I think I would. Still need another
that crunch time five is still good. So my thought is if they can replace Kay, I don't see any other team that really blows my hair back.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I mean, I never thought the Wildcats were going to win last year, to be perfectly honest, you know, in the way they were playing early on. The fact that they won this thing was pretty impressive. They came together at the right time.
Oh, amazing. It's been 2 years now where it's been real amazing for them to do it, yep.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be confident about them doing it again because I think they're lucky to get it done this year, really.
I'm actually confident. I think if they can replace Kay, that crunch time five is still okay. You look at New Zealand, Patterson, like, all right, he's good, but you know, his teams normally finish fourth and fifth and a bounce in the first round. Not that that's on him totally. I look at that Webster backcourt, I'm like, could be volatile. And Webster's coming off the bench. I don't know if that's his best position that he'll be happy with. And you know, Abercrombie, does he take a big step back now that he's mid 30s? Finn Delaney,
do you know the team? The team I look at is suddenly like, wow, the guys have gone from nothings to could be real excitement machines are the Hawks.
You know what? I kind of had the same thought myself. It's all Bairstow and all you need is Bairstow to miss a lot of time and they're done. I just don't like, but they've got an import up their sleeve and I share that. I'm excited.
Just sort of like, if you look, it's really turned around. They hit slow start with the recruiting, but they've really picked it up.
The team that I had high hopes for and has totally dropped off is Brisbane. I don't like that team anymore. I'm like, ooh. And then the one that I kind of look at with optimism, and mainly because they haven't signed two imports, is Southeast Melbourne. I think, well, they nail their two imports.
Yeah.
They've got some nice little pieces that could float in, bit of shooting, bit of Pino, bit of others. But anyway, let's jump on.
And I love their style. I love, Southeast Melbourne, like cool style basketball.
Yeah, love it. Yep. I think that's all on Kevin White. I don't think there's much else.
Yeah.
NBL Task Force and Hub, unless you've got something else to add.
No, that's all. Task Force and Hub. What do you think about this?
My first question to you, being on the other side of the country in West Australia, is did you find it odd? No WA representation, no owner of the Wildcats, no even sort of the Western Australian state sport administrator or something. I was surprised not to see that.
I've lived here long enough to know that we're continuously forgotten. It's part of being a Western Australian is that you forget, right. You get left off all the Australian stuff. Nah, I get it in the sense that they probably want to come together and it's a pain in the ass, although they can do it by Zoom and have WA representation. But I mean, if they looked at, they brought in some other owners, you're not going to bring in Jack Bendat, 95-year-old, to help you out in a COVID situation. He's probably highly quarantined himself. He'd be in a high risk category.
You know, got a bubble. About Bendat, more than a bubble. I've often seen Bendat as like, and I actually think Trevor Gleeson kind of looks like Super Krang to Bendat's Krang. You know, turtles, you know what I'm talking about? The brain inside the massive suit. Yeah. If you look at Trevor's head, he kind of looks like Super Krang, the robot that he's encased in. But, you know, that's for the fans out there. But, yeah, the task force, the WA representative. My question to you, Andrew, did this task force, and even if you've seen the interview with La Liga on Overtime, did it fill you with confidence in the belief that there will be a season in NBL 21?
Well, no, it didn't. He didn't. La Liga, I usually like his performances when I've seen him in the media. I thought this one was particularly bad. I felt he waffled, didn't make any clear points. Probably all the things I'm guilty of quite regularly. Waffling without making clear points, saying things without really leading, going anywhere with it. So, you know, who am I to cast stones? So sorry, Jeremy. But no, they were going through the motions. They had all the people, right? The big head honchos with, you know, financial backing behind them. But that doesn't. There was nothing of certainty that was said that I thought, we're going to have a team. We're going to have a season. What do you think?
Well, it didn't fill me with confidence that there was going to be. I thought whenever you have to set up a task force, that means there's a problem, right? If there wasn't a problem, there'd be no task force.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I thought, no, it's not an immediate red flag. The fact that it was very Melbourne-based suggests to me that it's more of a question of, what's going to happen with Melbourne? Because Perth, the reason why maybe they didn't have a representative is COVID's not really an issue for Perth and WA, I should say, and less than a thing for Adelaide, who had a representative, and Queensland not so much. So, but you know, New South Wales and Victoria were well represented because obviously they're.
I sort of think that's just the old boys club, though.
Yeah,
it's the old.
I think there's an element of both.
It's the corporate. It's with the corporate hubs, you know, it's like you know the same. They see each other in the same airport lounges and. They go to the same cocktail bars and you get the same group of people.
Yeah, I felt there was a little bit of like, don't worry, we have a task force. What's a task force? Like, I've always found it. Is it the A team? Like, what's going on here? What business could really be discussed in this task force specifically that's not already, you know, out on the street? And, you know, your man on the street knows whether we're going to have a season or not.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to look at the borders and moving. What I will and say
these
is,
tasks,
I think
this task the task force, what the oh, sorry.
No, you go.
I was just going to say the task force as well that comprised of high-level people, none of whom are the sort of people that are going to be doing the work. So this is a highly directive task force. Now, they're going to come up with ideas and suggestions. Who's going to do the doing? Because they're not.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. And that's the thing. I think this task force is set up to discuss this matter and maybe not exclusively this matter, but certainly principally this issue is if they cancel a season and they'd obviously still have to pay their players what's contracted, I would think, is that more or less of a loss than if they proceeded with compromised attendance or the threat of closing halfway? That's what I think they're working out, and that's for each little team and the practicality of doing it. Because if they felt like, going ahead with a season with a chance of a hub where games aren't attended at all, or, you know, 50% attendance cap due to COVID, you know, what is that going to equate to? How much are we going to lose comparative to just saying, sorry, no season? And then the hit to the brand of not having a season. That's what I think they're trying to work out. I really got the vibe that a cancellation of the season is, it's on the of course it's on the table. Moving those Melbourne teams in and around, you know, that's just not a good look.
So you think it's almost a bean counting exercise of
I do.
What
I think
cost
it's
benefits
a matter of,
financially of doing it or not.
And then second to that, the first thing is money. Money would always drive it, but secondly would be the practicality of what are the rules about travel through the states. The idea of hubs. Do you believe that? How can that happen? Untelevised, unattended hubs? Come on.
No, it's just not going to work, is it?
No.
The only way they can make
televised, but not commercially televised.
Yeah. That's the problem. If they had a good TV deal, you could make a hub work. It could be a good thing.
Agreed.
If you had the good TV deal, but they don't. And unlikely
stuff,
to get
like,
one.
Is this an option? Like, you know, could you pay or do an NBL TV subscription service? But they've got SBS, ESPN. They've signed up to them. They can't get out of that. So.
And they did the NBL TV a couple of years ago. That was terrible implementation, but it didn't set the world on fire. I don't think enough has changed to make people want to sign up now. Especially in if everybody loses their jobs and they don't have money to spend, that's the other thing. Yeah. Don't want to sign up for more subscriptions. The other thing that due credit, I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about the baseball season in America.
Name it. Which one?
It's called Dithering. It was which is by John Gruber, who's a Mac podcaster guy, and Ben Thompson.
John and Hans.
What?
It's a diehard reference. Okay.
But anyway, they were talking about American baseball and the fact that after the lockout they had a few years ago, it wasn't COVID related, it was salary related. Mm-hmm. It took years for attendance to come back up, and they were making the argument that it was basically people got out of the habit of going to the baseball.
This is a huge issue. Like if the NBL takes a year off,
they found other things to do, so people didn't go back to the baseball even though it was on. And you sort of worry, is that, have they factored that into NBL basketball? If it goes away,
great question.
Do people trade over to the NBA, or do they give up on basketball altogether?
You've sort of preempted an issue that I was going to do an episode by myself where I was going to read out an open letter to Larry Kesselman, things I would do for the league. And you look at it and this is the perfect, if ever there was a thought to go back to winter. And there are a couple of sort of lightning bolt moments in the NBL where a big decision need to be made, you know, like there's the import change, the move to summer. I feel like this is one moment now where it's like, if ever they were going to move back to winter, this is really your only chance, because it works perfectly. You just say, no, COVID's too high. We're going to delay the season till winter, and then we're going to keep going through winter.
Yeah.
This is their chance. It's a really bold move. And, you know, that could be a 25-minute conversation, an hour-long conversation. But,
I would love that personally. Selfishly, I would love it going back to winter.
I've got my four dot. I'm going to do this episode. I've got four or five reasons why I think you should do it. Because I mean, if you're putting up the NBL product up against the NBA, I mean, people who like the NBL are still going to stay. But your fair weather fan, in the bubble and the NBA, it's just going to supersede. But there's a number of reasons to move back to winter. Besides, the big one being, it's been 20 some years since we moved to summer, and it's still not on TV. So are we waiting another 20? You know, at what point do you go throw your hands up and go, it didn't work? Well, you know, we're going to move. Hubs. Like, come on. It can't be done. I wouldn't have thought.
No.
Anything else to add on this one?
No. I think we wait and see what the task force determines. Cross our fingers. The task force is doing as well. Cross fingers.
Just crossing fingers, hoping, waiting, count a few beans.
Yeah.
The Kings logo change, and I want to talk about this in two ways. First of all, the nuts and bolts of it. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you care? And then secondly, if you've read anything about it, the coverage of it and the way it's been covered. So my first question is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you care?
Three. Okay. Change away.
What feels a three? Because I'm an absolute naught. I don't care. Change it.
Wow. I thought I was going low.
Change it for the better. Teams change their logos all the time. I don't see if the if the caricature or whatever it is costs a dime, it's money poorly spent. Ben, just change it.
Yep.
What gives you three? Just the fact that you were just being kind, or
I was being kind. Yeah, I was like, well, I have, you know, and I've read some articles on it, and I've sort of followed the news, so I must care a little bit. I'm actually kind of like, okay, it's always fun to get something new. Although the designs we've seen so far, I wouldn't say that they are new. They're derivative. Yeah, exactly. Mm. I hope that's just a working element rather than sort of a proposal to be the final design.
And on the coverage of it,
basically, talk about NBAs. Let's just rip off NBA logos.
Yeah, no, they can do better than that. Bring in an Aboriginal element. An indigenous element or something a little bit more. They're a bit American for my taste. But honestly, I've got so little taste in that sort of logos and things, and I'm sure there's some good people working on it. The coverage of it was what was interesting to me, because have you seen, I think it was Kelly Osbourne, when she was sort of defending anti-Trump, and she goes, well, if you close the border, who's going to clean your toilet? And in her defense of the minority constituents, slagged them off totally inadvertently. And I felt like this is what happened in the coverage of this a lot, where I heard a radio interview where they're like, well, you know, the trust is asking for $50,000 and the Kings aren't going to pay it. I mean, they can't pay. They just sort of start slagging up the Kings and the NBL for not having any money. And I was like, oh, geez. Just think about it, you know. It's like, and he goes $50,000, and you know the Roosters and whatever might be, but the Kings can't pay that. The NBL can't pay that. It was very funny, but it did make me laugh. But I just like the way that the Kings and the NBL were made out to be like, oh, Oliver Twist over here, kind of, you know, he's got his paws up.
They crying poor. Mm. Yes. I just want to go back. Do you, with the logo? Mm. Mm-hmm. My memory's a bit foggy, but I feel like it was during was it Lorraine Landon that was involved with the Kings for a period of time? Is that the correct name?
Yeah, I think so. Similar. Yeah.
And they did, when they moved back to the SEC or whatever. No, what was it called? The State Sports Centre, the SSC. I feel like they did a rebrand at some point there. There was this weird season where the Kings, they bought a new court. And the court was like, it's really dark colored court. And the logo seemed to change. And I didn't really ever understand what was happening with the Kings. And they had this weird season.
I have heard about this. A friend of mine where I worked tapped me on the shoulder and said, I remember there was a time when all the Kings gear was kept in a closet at the Sydney Entertainment Center, which is wherever I was in Sydney at that time. But he just said, it was just all this branding and stuff there. Like the team just totally just, it was like, tools dropped with the whole firepower thing, and it was just I'll look into this some more, because I think you're very right when you say it.
There was just this, I just remember that, and there was something, they bought a new court and then the court got it disappeared. And I would love to know actually what all played out, but at that time I feel like there was a different Kings logo
I'll research that. I had a an idea for the new logo. I thought you could have a silhouette of the Harbour Bridge, right? So the beautiful Harbour Bridge at sort of sundown or sunup. Yep. And then, caricature of that. And then the Ruby Princess docked just under it as people on it just file off into circular quay. Should I cut that?
You could have a basketball, but the basketball has little tentacles coming off it, like the virus sort of logo as well.
You know, it'd be of the times, but take your pick, you know. Whatever.
Certainly not derivative, that one.
No, that's a new one. Let's jump on to the young players coming in. Real influx of young players coming in, and by virtue, presumably older players going out. But I'll give you a list of the new guys that are coming in. Max Darling, Yanni Wetzel, Isaac White, Mason Peatling, Tamuri Wignes, hope I'm pronouncing that right, Dejan Vasiljevic, Tanner Krebs, Jack White, Mojave King, Josh Giddey. I think there may be others. They're the main ones. I got three questions coming off the signings of these guys. Who are you most excited to see play and why?
I think if you're asking me, I've got to say I'm most excited to see Josh Giddey, because he's the one that's had all the attention and the press and the talk. Mm-hmm. I'm probably a little bit, a lot of the other guys are probably really flown under the radar a little bit. Some of them come in with a bit of a good rap, but don't really know what to expect from young guys like that. So, yeah, for in terms of seeing the future potential of somebody, Josh Giddey.
Yeah. For me, it's yourself. Just Mahabi King. Cairns, number 7 on these draft boards. I don't know how much stock I put in them. And before we go on with this anymore, like we've seen a tiny little bit of these guys, a few highlights, an article here or there, but I'm not going to even pretend to know if they're going to be good. And until they get here and play, anything you watch is really, it's something to go by, but it's not a lot. Yeah. We're more looking at situational stuff here for those of you listening. But for me,
Mahabi King, kids with the highest raps can like
18, 19 years old, you know? They can flame out so easily and get, you know, they're fragile for the most part. It's, I don't envy them at all. And I don't put any burden on them and any team. Go easy on them.
Yep. Mm. Go easy on them.
But most excited to see, for me, Mahabi King, he's got a decent rap on him. And he, of the bunch, he's kind of quite under the radar. Like Giddey's come with a lot of hang-ups. Him, not so much. And the other one's weakness. I want to see what, you know, people coming out of this center of excellence are actually, you know, how honed they are at a young age. What about, who do you think is going to put up the best stats?
Well, I think, again, maybe Giddey, because it seems like he might be the one getting the court time. So in terms of, you know, bulk stats, you'd probably lean towards him. I'm quietly questioning whether Dejan Vasiljevic might do quite well. If he's shooting translates, if he can shoot that as well as you know, claimed, it doesn't matter where you are, what court, what league you're playing in, if you can shoot the ball, it will still go in, right?
He was my answer for that exact reason. Shooting translates, if you're 19 or 30, if you're open and can shoot it, unless you're really fragile, you're going to make it. And I think also, not only that shooting translate, but situation as well. I look at the Kings and I think, is he going to start? I mean, it's probably going to be Newley and Luzada, but even still, Luzada, you know, he's got an injury history, seems to get banged up a bit. You know, he's sort of a 25-minute player, so there's a guaranteed 15 minutes or so, and they're probably going to play Luzada backing up Newley like they did last year. So he's going to see minutes, I think. Kevin Lish is gone. Yep. He seems to be the replacement of Kevin Lish. So situation meets shooting, and he's older. I think he is a senior coming out of college. So he's, in his early 20s, so he's a little bit older than some of the others on the list, like Giddey and so forth. So I think he's the one I think he's going to have a season like Mirko Jeric. Between 5 and 10 points, decent percentages. I don't think – he seems to have a pretty snappy disposition. Like, I don't think he's going to he's got that sort of bit of an edge to him, which is good.
Yep.
And has played at a big college in front of big crowds. So, he's why I choose him. Third question I had off these young guys is – which player will contribute most to a winning rotation? Who's going to actually be a part of winning in the NBL? And this is a really tough question.
It's a bit of a trick question because you got to analyze across two planes, don't you? Do you want to go first or do you want me to give you my answers?
You go.
Okay. I said Jack White for Melbourne.
We didn't confer on these answers, by the way.
No, we haven't. And so that was my first answer. And I also put in there Mahabi King as a backup. Those are my two guys.
And why?
Well, it was about the winning team. It was like who – and these guys, I felt like they're the most ready to contribute. Not necessarily in points, points production or anything like that, but understand their role and will play that role well and sort of keep the head in check and have the support of, like you say, a winning team. Sure. So that was my thinking.
Makes sense. I went with a couple of Jack White. I thought, first of all, 4 years at Duke, early 20s. Also, he's going to play. He is going to get those Toey Smith Milners and probably a little bit more as Barlow kind of, you would think, his minutes recede. The other reason why I chose the other one, I'm going to say, the other reason I chose Jack White is signed a multi-year deal. So I think he's not worried. While he wants to make NBA, or I suppose every player does, he's signed multi-year. So his commitment is to the NBL. So when Vickerman speaks, he's going to know that, I'm going to listen to this, play it out, because, I'm here next year. Yep. Mahabi King is the only reason I thought, he's looking at NBA. He's looking to post stuff, numbers and things. And I'm not saying he's a selfish player or what have you, but young man, that sort of pressure, it's a lot. It's a lot to take in. Whereas Jack White, I feel like there's not that pressure and he'll be more of a contributor. The other one I thought, and this is a bit more of a daring answer, but Max Darling, this 19-year-old kid to the Hawks, and that's very young. And here's why I say him. Played in Croatia, so done a little bit of pro stuff. It's not as good a league as the NBL, not even close. But gee, he's big. And
he's huge, isn't translates.
He is massive, this kid. Massive, broad across the shoulders, big. And listen, I think shooting translates, but in the NBL, I think athleticism translates. Like, who, and also because of the position these two guys play, that sort of 3-4. It's a weak position, especially now that Kay's gone. And I feel like if he gets minutes, just if he sets good picks and rolls really hard and jumps really high and lobs and catches, who's going to be there to block him? Bogut's not there. Plumlee's iffy. You know, even guys like Pledger aren't in the paint. Like, it's going to be a smaller game. And I just feel like at his body, I'm just like, if he can just get in there and just be a wrecking ball and sort of play a Jawai with athleticism kind of spot, I feel like he could just catch lobs and really surprise.
Like Jawai's first season in the league when he was just dunking everything. It was just ridiculous.
Exactly. And I feel like I just get I just looked at his body. I thought, gee, he's got his size is not seen in the NBL this season. I don't know who else other than Jawai who contends for him for size. So I really
good answer. As long as it'll depend his court time. I agree with you totally about that. It'll depend on how he performs defensively. Whether he gets the minutes. Because it doesn't matter if you can score a few buckets. I don't think Gorge cares if you're a sieve at the other end.
And the worry is that position is stacked for them, or relatively stacked. You've got Besto and you've got Froehlich. But, you know, a few injuries here or there. He'll see. And I just feel
different
like
look. It's a good answer. Good answer. Thank I like
you.
It, mate.
That's my rationale anyway. Could be go totally tits up. We shall see. last on this one, I want to talk about for people what's left. I mean, what teams, how many spots are left, how many import spots are left, and then who's still kind of available and just have a chat about it. So best available free agent.
Your dinner. You have your dinner and you eat the steak and you eat the potatoes and then you look and it's just a pile of peas. And you think, do I bother? Do I want them?
I feel cruel to the people on this list, but I think the peas are gone. I think this is the cigarette that's been put in. That's mean, but we are. There is very few spots left, and the list is pretty trim. Anyway, best available free agents from NBL 20 returning players, because you know there's players everywhere like Angus Brown. That's a list too long to mention, but I'll name them, and then Andrew, you tell me who's the top three from this list: Mika Vekona, Tim Conrad, David Anderson, AJ Ogilvie, Alex Pledger, Jordan Nartai, Ethan Rusbach, Denga Kuth, Daniel Kickett, Lucas Walker. They're the guys. Give me a top three as best you can.
It was hard. There's some guys there that probably should be at retirement age. Yep. Look, I had, and this is in order, okay? So number three, I'll do it backwards to build excitement. Number three, Ethan Rusbach.
Can shoot it.
Still pretty young. I think he'd be willing to take any role to just be in the league. So going with him. Number two, AJ Ogilvie.
Good answer.
You can't teach size, and he's got size, and he's a handy player. I think he needs a certain circumstance. I think a change of scenery would be good for him. Mm-hmm. But I think there's still the boom. He was a boomer, right? At least at some level.
Yeah.
So look, he's not a total chump unless he's playing in Perth where he turns to water. But, you know, apart from that, take him.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Daniel Kickett.
Good answer.
He's a shooter. He's coming off a good season. And I thought last season he actually improved his defensive efforts as well. I thought he was good all around. And
I'm
I think
he's not signed.
I don't understand it. Is there contractual disputes? Why would you not pick him up?
I don't know. That's a question I don't have an answer to. My list is almost identical to you. I've definitely got to kick it up the top. OJ will be second, but my third spot changes. And I guess it's just because, I mean, we talked about this. You know, Cam Besto is the best contracted power forward in the NBL, I think. Yeah. So for that reason, I put Lucas Walker. Been on the podcast before. Did that sway my thinking? Probably. Super nice guy, but P.S. But also, I just feel like in, like, he fills that spot, and he's, well, early 30s, can shoot it a little, played one game last year, which is amazing considering how egalitarian Sydney were with their rotations. Played in the semifinal, hit a couple of shots. You know, he's had a year to recoup his body after what was a pretty injury play year in Cairns. Just look at him and think that spot is so weak, that sort of bigger 3-4, you know. I mean, as much as Ethan Rusbatch is nice, most teams are going to fill that spot with an import. And then same with Ogilvy and kick it there, they're good. I just feel like Lucas Walker, you know, after he's had a chance to recoup, still early 30s, I just feel like he can give you something. Tim Conrad I toyed around with, but just not the defender.
Yeah.
I don't know if he can stay in front of people anymore.
Lucas Walker's got to be one of the all-time greatest love him, hate him players. Yeah, he can be. You're either ecstatic with his performance or driven crazy. He's a. You never know what you're going to get.
Exactly. I think in a compromised NBL 21, he can give you 10 minutes. And really, if he can still give you 10 minutes. I feel like he's had that year. But as I said, the list is tough. And just looking at that, I've got, by my count, and I don't know if you did any sums yourself, but I've got 18 spots available still in the NBL, 13 of which could be filled by imports. I've got Adelaide have done their roster. Brisbane have got a spot open and two imports available, which I don't know if the maths holds up there. Cairns have got four spots with two imports. The Hawks, one spot and one import slot available. Melbourne, two spots. One of them needs to be an import. Breakers, three spots. One of them can be an import. Perth, two spots. One of them can be an import. South East Melbourne, two spots. Two can be imports. And then Sydney, three spots, two imports. Have I done that right? I think so. Sydney can only sign one more local. So, you know, we're right at the end of this.
What it's missing is where's the sort of the couple of young players that come out of nowhere? They get pulled out from the lower leagues, you know, the state leagues, NBL 1, and sort of make a bit of a name for themselves. Where are those guys? Do they ever get a crack? Yeah.
Like the name that just hit me was Anthony Fisher, point guard out of Cairns. Like he just didn't see the floor.
I just think maybe some of these teams should have some open runs and just see, you know, of the talent around who might be worthy of a spot.
Mm. I saw Sam McDaniels re-sign with Melbourne and everyone's like, oh, good signing. I was like, I don't think I saw him play last year. And I looked and he played in a few games. If his minutes equaled more than total 20 or something, I'd be blown away. I just don't even recall him getting any time at all.
It's something like junk minute.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. So you know, and that's where we find ourselves with free agency at this point. It's all just imports. But just quickly going back to Perth, I just think Cotton's going to naturalize. When I heard that he could naturalize mid season and they sign an import, I just went, oh well, that's going to happen. And I totally lost any anxiety or. You know, that I had about that team at all. And then the other thing
I was going to say, it would make sense because they've been so quiet in this off-season to date. And you would have to think that maybe that's because they similarly are relaxed and comfortable and knowing that Cotton's going to be an Aussie.
Yeah, and if that happens, I think you'd agree with me that it's over, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because you just get a sort of, ball handling, you get a wing, you can do whatever you want. It doesn't matter if you've got a good four, but I think we'll close on this, but that import four, when they announced that, that is one guy. I don't really scout many of the imports coming in. He's one guy who I will be looking at. Where has he played? What has he done? Because it can't be a Dario Hunt, who was a fine player, but you need big volume of production.
They need to get somebody who has a name. And ideally NBA experience.
Yeah, I agree. That is going to be the announcement of the season. That's going to be the one that defines it. I think we're done, Andrew. I don't think it's a slow day. We're in the doldrums of free agency, especially with coronavirus going on. But I think that's it. Is there anything else to add?
No, I think we've done well. We've gotten close to 50 minutes of talk on a quiet week. If I'm talking to you during the season, what's it going to be like? We'll never be able to stop. I'm happy.
Andrew, As am I. Andrew, pleasure.
Thanks, mate.